Welcome to Globe and Crown Radio. I'm Joey.
And I'm Nathan.
This is season number 3, episode number 2.
And we're glad to be back.
We are back. And as promised, we are going to get going with our anthology.
Indeed we are.
Which was the name of Alien Ant Farm's first CD and maybe only CD.
How can you have an anthology when you haven't had anything else?
I think because it said ant in it.
Oh,
so I think it was called Anthology.
Anthology.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, makes sense, I guess.
You know what? Everyone remembers the song, the Smooth Criminal remake.
Right.
But I thought that Just Like the Movie song's like a really good song. I heard it the other day on Spotify and I was like, it's a very poignant, well-written pop song.
Well, way to go. Alien Ant Farm.
So season 4 will just be about Alien Ant Farm.
Yeah, that's just going to be the whole theme all the way through.
I do like talking about space, though. I have so much to say from the last episode about space still.
We could do a whole season about space. I think that there's plenty of space in space to talk about it.
Wow.
I know. I'm apologize for what I am.
Would we be the stars of that space?
Yes, we would.
Oh, man.
What a thing.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Dude, Keanu Reeves is in a band called Dogstar.
What?
And that has a star in it.
Yeah, it does.
And I love Keanu Reeves.
What kind of music do they do?
Just like alternative rock.
Oh, cool. What does he play? I mean, is he...
What do you think he plays?
Keytar.
That's a pretty good guess. That's not. He plays bass.
That makes sense as well.
He could not be guitar. He would have to be a drummer or a bass player just because he's so chill.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
He's 52 years old.
That is unbelievable to me because he doesn't look like he's aged for a long time.
Mm-mm.
Maybe it's because he's so chill.
I would have a Keanu Reeves podcast.
If you would like to go
through all of the Keanu Reeves movies, I would happily do that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Off the top of my head, my favorite Keanu Reeves movies, The Matrix, obviously, very, very high up.
Just the very first one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not the trilogy?
No, although I do like the Animatrix, which is the five or six anime shorts. Those are really good.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever actually seen those.
Oh, dude.
I need to.
There's this one about this guy who's in the Matrix, and he's a track star.
Okay.
And he's running, and they don't want him to become too big of a deal, so the machines, like, snap his calf muscle.
What?
But he is, like, has so much determination, he continues running even though his calf muscle is snapped, and they're just like, whoa, who is this guy?
That's pretty nuts.
It is pretty good. That's probably my favorite one.
Okay, so you got The Matrix in the Animatrix.
The Replacements, where he plays football.
Yeah.
And Lex Luthor is the old coach.
Okay, yeah. Lex Luthor, wait, is this Kevin Spacey or Gene Hackman?
Gene Hackman.
Okay.
Matrix, Replacements. I really like Johnny Mnemonic.
I remember Johnny Mnemonic being out, but I don't remember anything about it.
With ESP in it.
What?
And Henry Rollins is in it. And I think Ice Cube is in it. It's like the dolphin trainer.
What?
It's a crazy pants movie.
Let me show you about dolphins.
What are some other great Keanu Reeves movies? So Point the John Break. Wick, I haven't seen 2 yet, but those are both awesome.
Yeah.
I haven't seen 2. I'm just...
I think that's a pretty
statement
safe.
Of faith.
Yeah.
He's played guys named John 6 times, I think. He was Don John the Bastard in Much Ado About Nothing.
Okay.
About noting? Nothing.
Okay.
And you know who is in that? Is Underworld.
Kate Beckinsale?
Kate Beckinsale is in that movie.
Wow.
Yeah. Who knew? It was like the first thing she ever did that was big.
She voices, I just found this out the other day. I play Elder Scrolls Online quite a bit. It's like the only video game that I play anymore. It's an MMO made by the same people who made like Skyrim and some of those things, if you've heard about. Skyrim's probably the biggest one that people have heard about. And she's like the queen of one of the, like, there's three different societies or whatever that are at war in it so that you can have PvP or player versus player combat. And so, yeah, she's the voice of one of them.
She's also the queen in the hearts of nerds.
Yes, that feels accurate.
Because she's a vampire that unites the lycans and the vampires.
Yeah, lycans being werewolves,
yeah.
In case you were unaware of that whole...
Is lycan like a real actual old term from another language?
Lycanthropy is actually like it's what werewolf stuff is. Like
okay.
The scientific, even though that's not scientific, it's like the scientific term for lycanthropy would be
okay.
Werewolf.
What syndrome. Are the Keanu Reeves movies? Oh, I love Constantine. I think Constantine's a great movie. I
haven't seen Constantine
I think
either.
It's one of the first good comic
But what about
book
Point
movies.
Break? I mentioned Point Break now already once.
Oh, I'm sorry. Johnny Utah.
What about Point Break?
Speed?
Point Break!
Johnny, his name in Point Break is Johnny Utah.
Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah. I feel better now.
Yeah.
You've addressed my Point Break thing. When he goes over onto his back and fires his gun.
Catherine Bigelow directed it and went to bat to make sure he was the main guy. And everyone was like, why would we put Bill and Ted's in Point Break? And she was like, no.
Trust me, this guy's going
to
be good.
He needs to be in Point Break. Yeah, with the great Texan Patrick Swayze.
Yep.
What a fantastic movie.
It was excellent movie.
Just Keanu shooting into the air. Ah! Love that Keanu.
Yeah, and he just lets Patrick Swayze at the end. Okay, that's a spoiler. I'm not going to get. Well, that's it's an old
movie.
Been
out for
So he lets him. He's like, he's going to let him go. And he goes into the
big
like,
wave.
Tsunami wave the or whatever. Break. And they're like, oh, you let him go? And he's like, he's going to die anyway. Look at that. If he lives, he deserves to. And it's true. He did.
That's a great movie.
Deserve to live if he made it through.
What was the other one I said in the middle of all that? There was another one around that time. Oh,
Walk
Speed.
In the Clouds.
Speed is fantastic. Speed holds up pretty good, too.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Because there's nice. So many practical effects, and practical effects don't, like,
they don't
start
age,
looking
yeah.
bad.
Damn.
Plus, that was, like, everyone's intro to Sandy Bullock.
Yeah. Another great Texan, right? Yeah. Isn't she from Texas?
I don't know if she's from here. She does
she's
live
involved,
here.
She did
live here for a long time.
She's been involved with Texas long enough that I'm willing to give her the yes. benefit of the doubt on that
she
one.
She earned it.
Yep.
Just like Davy Crockett didn't live in Texas most of his life, but did come here, and we consider him a Texas hero. Yep. So is Sandra Bullock.
Yep.
Other great Keanu Reeves movies. I didn't like Hardball.
I don't think that I saw Hardball. I keep bringing up Walk in the Clouds, though. I think I brought it up. I don't know if it made
it
in the cut last time. It's one of his rom-com. Well, it's not a com. It's a rom. It's drama. And like he's a war veteran or something like that. That was he was an orphan and he comes back and there's like this this Mexican American family that they live in California, and she is pregnant from some other person altogether, and she brings him along to meet her family so that he can be the dad of the child. It's actually a pretty good movie. It goes through. I mean, for being a romantic drama type deal,
drum,
a chick flick. So I enjoy it. It's one of my four chick flicks I have on DVD.
What are the other ones?
The Notebook, one that I'm apparently doesn't count, which is The Terminal, which has always been an interesting non-romantic.
That's a Tom Hanks movie?
Tom Hanks and Catherine Zeta-Jones, yeah.
Okay.
There's some really interesting stuff in that, mainly because it's just non-traditional. I like that aspect of it. And then I've got The Holiday, which I'm
pretty
sure
Holiday.
You're a big fan of The Holiday. I really, really, really disliked it. So I didn't enjoy it at all.
But you own it.
But I do own it, yes.
Fascinating. Yep. So Sam and I have been going through Hallmark movies.
Yeah.
Maybe there will be a Halby Zero podcast about that. I don't know, but
should be.
I'm a big fan of the rom-coms.
Yeah.
Always have been.
Yeah. They're great.
Keanu Reeves has not made a rom-com, right? He's made a bunch of roms.
Like yeah. I think that's fairly accurate to state, and none of them have been funny. So are we going to jump into this anthology business?
I think it's a little late to jump in, but we will
wade in.
Yes,
as slowly.
Yeah,
to get used to the temperature of the water.
Yes.
Is it better to wade in, or is it better to jump in?
I think it's. So the idea of the anthology is it's like a stuff you love, right? So I think it would be like a warm, relaxing temperature.
Yeah.
Unless you like really cold water.
I don't know why you would, but yeah.
For ice.
But yeah, I mean, that's nice for a beverage, but if you're going to go inside of it or whatever.
Anyway, we don't want that.
Yeah.
All right. My first entry into the anthology.
Let's get after
is
it.
Is a poem. For future reference, they don't all have to be poems. I have some songs in mind also.
Yeah.
Some TV show episodes.
I can think of some TV show episodes as well. Mm-hmm. Some film parts. Give me your poetry, Joey. Give me an introduction
all right.
to this poem a little
so
bit.
So Billy Collins was also a poet laureate in America, just like Robert Pinsky was, who wrote Singing School, which is what this anthology season's based on.
Very cool.
Billy Collins, insightful, doesn't take himself too seriously, funny, but then can just like do a little twist and give you some insight and some kind of like poignant thing. And you're like, oh, Billy Collins, you're so good.
Yeah.
This one is called Victoria's Secret, and it is about the Victoria's Secret catalog.
Very risque.
So he was just thumbing through his mail, and he was bemused by this catalog. He wrote this as an older guy.
Okay.
And here we go.
Let's get after it.
I'm going to read this long poem, and you can follow along by looking it up. Victoria's Secret by Billy Collins.
Let's go.
Okay.
Do you want me to snap?
When I'm done.
Okay.
Not now.
I didn't know if
well,
it was
I
like
guess
slam
if you,
poetry.
If we introed me, now Joey Halbert, to read Victoria's Secret by Billy Collins. There we go. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
You know what? Another one of my favorite poems.
Can we just get to this one?
And She's All That. the hacky sack, like spoken word thing.
Hack-y-sack.
We should read that next.
I feel good about that.
I'll put that at the end of this.
Sounds good.
Because I can do that because this is our show.
Oh, 100%. Do whatever we want. Might as well do what we want. Yeah.
All right. The one in the upper left-hand corner is giving me a look that says, I know you are here, and I have nothing better to do for the remainder of human time than return your persistent but engaging stare. She is wearing a deeply scalloped flame-stitch halter top with padded push-up styling and easy side-zip tap pants.
Oh.
The one on the facing page, however, who looks at me over her bare shoulder, cannot hide the shadow of annoyance in her brow. You've interrupted me, she seems to be saying, with your coughing and your loud music. Now please leave me alone. Let me finish whatever it is that I was doing in my organza-trimmed whisper-weight camisole with keyhole closure and point d'espirit mesh back. I wet my thumb and flip the page. Here, the one who happens to be reclining in a satin and lace Merry Widow with an inset lace up front, decorated underwire cups and bodice with lace ruffles along the bottom and hook and eye closure in the back, is wearing a slightly contorted expression, her head thrust back, mouth partially open in a confusing mixture of pain and surprise, as if she had just stepped on a tack just as I was breaking down her bedroom door with my shoulder. That's awesome. Nor does the one directly beneath her look particularly happy to see me. She's arching one eyebrow slightly as if to say, so what if I am wearing nothing but this stretch pan velvet bodysuit with a low sweetheart neckline featuring molded cups and adjustable straps? Do you have a problem with that? The one on the far right is easier to take, her eyes half closed, as if she were listening to a melody of lullabies playing faintly on a music box. Soon she will drop off to sleep, her head nestled in the soft crook of her arm, and later she will wake up in her spandex slip dress with a high side slit, deep scoop neckline, elastic shirring, and concealed back zip and vent. But opposite her, stretched out cat-like on a couch in the warm glow of a paneled library, is one who wears a distinctly challenging expression, her face tipped up, exposing her long neck, her perfectly flared nostrils. Go ahead, her expression tells me. Take off my Chatan Sarmoose gown with a sheer jacquard bodice decorated with a touch of shimmering lurex. Go ahead, fling it in the fireplace. What do I care, her eye says. We're all going to hell anyway. I have other mail to open, but I cannot help noticing her neighbor, whose eyes are downcast, her head ever so demurely bowed to the side, as if she were the model who set for Correggio when he painted the Madonna of St. Jerome. Only it became so ungodly hot in Parma that afternoon, she had to remove the traditional blue robe and pose there in his studio, in a beautifully shaped satin teddy with embossed V-front, princess seeming to mold the bodice and puckered knit detail. And occupying the whole facing page is one who displays the expression we have come to associate with photographic beauty. Yes, she is pouting about something, all lower lip and cheekbone. Perhaps her ice cream has tumbled out of its cone onto the parquet floor. Perhaps she's been waiting all day for a new sofa to be delivered. Waiting all day in stretch lace hipster with lattice edging, satin frog closures, velvet scrollwork, cuffed ankles, flare silhouette, and knotted shoulder straps available in black, champagne, almond, cinnabar, plum, bronze, mocha, peach, ivory, caramel, blush, butter, rose, and periwinkle. It is, of course, impossible to say, impossible to know what she's thinking, why her mouth is the shape of petulance. But this is already too much. Who has the time to linger on these delicate lures, these once unmentionable things? Life is rushing by like a mad swollen river. One minute roses are opening in the garden, and the next snow is flying past my window. Plus the phone is ringing, the dog is whining at the door, rain is beating on the roof. And as always, there is a list of things I have to do before the night descends, black and silky, and the dark hours begin to hurtle by, before the little doors of the body swing shut, and I ride to sleep, my eyes closed, still burning from all the glossy lights of day. Nice.
That was wonderful.
I think the reason I like this one so much is it takes something that we all agree is kind of silly and... I remember there was a time when the Victoria's Secret catalog was like a huge deal. And now I guess the big deal is the fashion show they do on TV.
Right. Yeah.
But I just like how he was able to take it. And like, as an older guy, is just kind of bemused by the whole thing. And like, why are they posed like this? What's happening?
Right.
I like that he can elevate something as kind of silly as just thumbing through the mail and make it this like big experience that everyone can kind of relate to. It's kind of like a good comic. Where he takes something that everyone is just normal to people, but kind of elevates it into something that worth thinking about. I like at the end how he uses some of the same kind of language that he was talking about and all that, talking about what it's like when the night descends, and uses that same kind of colorful language and creativity to describe, just with like a rose blooming and the wind blowing by, how time is passing so much more quickly for him now.
Right.
I think it's a really fun mix of humor and observation about life and the nature of life. And I think the sweet spot for me in entertainment, I like, if it's like Parks and Rec or Scrubs or what is that good Superman comic? Secret Identity?
Yeah, Secret Identity.
It's just incredible. Like funny and poignant and really kind of captures life from a kind of bemused,
right,
man, appreciative point of view.
Boom. He knows how to do that.
Yeah, he's great. So that's my first entry into the anthology.
Very exciting. I'm going to go a little bit farther back in time than whenever this poem by Billy Collins was written. Do you have an idea when the actual publishing date was?
I will look it up.
We're going to look it up and we're going to get that information for you in due time. I'm going to jump back into around the 8th, 9th, 10th, somewhere in there. We don't know exactly when, century AD, to a poem that you've probably at least somewhat familiar with, unfortunately likely due to horrible adaptations that have been made for film or television. But it's called Beowulf, and we don't actually know who wrote it. It was just some Anglo poet that existed somewhere in England or in that general region or whatever that decided that he was going to write this super bad-a tale about this Scandinavian guy who becomes king. He fights a monster and ultimately ends up becoming the Lord. No, Hrothgar is the king of the place where he originally goes. Beowulf is from Geatland.
Oh.
Gateland. I don't know exactly how you say that because it's all like weird. None of the language looks like it makes sense, which I have a really cool copy, by the way. It's a translation by Seamus Haney, and it's a bilingual edition. It's got this cool, like, kind of mailed figure who's wearing, I think it's called a coif over the top or whatever, mm-hmm. that goes on the top of your head. You know, it's the mail for that, and then you wear your mail shirt up underneath, and so it protects you from arrows and whatnot everywhere.
Chainmail, not like postcards and...
Right, chainmail, yeah.
Victoria's Secret catalogs.
Linked forged chain.
Yeah.
But it's a bilingual edition, so it actually has it in the old English that it was originally written in, as on one side of the page, and then on the other side of the page is the modern translation that Seamus Haney had done. This was a pretty powerful work. I'll get into it, and then I'll come back, I guess, to why, but... I don't know if this is still the case, but I know back in when I first read it, it was part of language arts or whatever it was curriculum,
like high school
reading. It was middle school. I remember that. Okay. We read this for the first time. It was one of those things where it was meant to be a work that you were supposed to read. It was supposed to be educational in some way, shape, or form. It was valid because of that. And it was the first thing that really kind of struck and resonated with me, I guess, where I was like, oh man, like learning stuff can be cool. Like there was definitely stuff that I read in middle school that teachers had recommended to me, but I read as fun because mm-hmm. that was the first time that I read The Hobbit and like really got into that. And I think we've talked about it on previous podcasts where that was a super impactful yeah. work that made a big difference for me. But this was the first time that I think like learning specifically, like this is an assignment that I got super into. And I think it got me into a bunch of other aspects of learning that I can attribute to this. So I'm going to read a little bit of the end of the epic poem Beowulf. This is far in the future after he's fought the like main villain that was Grendel, who he had fought through the vast majority of the story. That's the story that we know that usually gets translated, I guess, or is in the adaptations as Beowulf versus Grendel, where Hrothgar, who has a mead hall, and like his mead hall is where he's trying to protect that and all of his people that are there, and so he calls for Beowulf to come, and Beowulf, this great champion of the Geats. Shows up and fights this creature. But this is Beowulf as he is already now the king of the his people. Far in the future, 50 years after he's fought Grendel, he's an old man now, and there's a dragon that is fighting his people or causing difficulty for them, and he's going to go and he's going to slay it and he's going to gain the treasure so that he can make this like great gift to his people of the treasures that it guards.
Dragons love treasure.
Yeah, they do love treasure. Even from, I mean, this is 1,000+ years old, so we get to hear all of that from there. So I'm going to start here in the 2,620th stanza of the epic poem. Beosten kept that war gear for a lifetime, the sword and the mail shirt, until it was the son's turn to follow his father and perform his part. Then in old age, at the end of his days, among the weather geats, he bequeathed to Wiglaf innumerable weapons, and now the youth was to enter the line of battle with his lord. His first time to be tested as a fighter. His spirit did not break, and the ancestral blade would keep its edge, as the dragon discovered as soon as they came together in the combat. Sad at heart, addressing his companions, Wiglaf spoke wise and fluent words. I remember that time when mead was flowing, how we pledged loyalty to our lord in the hall, promised our ring giver we would be worth our price, make good the gift of the war gear, those swords and helmets, as when his need required it. He picked us out from the army deliberately, honored us, and judged us fit for this action, made me these lavish gifts, and all because he considered us the best of his arms-bearing thanes. And now, although he wanted this challenge to be one he'd face by himself alone, the shepherd of our land, a man unequaled in the quiet quest for glory, and name for daring, now the day has come when this lord we serve needs sound men to give them their support. Let us go to him, help our leader through the hot flame and dread of the fire. As God is my witness, I would rather my body were robed in the same burning blaze as my gold giver's body than but go back home bearing arms. That is unthinkable unless we have first slain the foe and defended the life of the Prince of the Weathergeats. I well know the things he has done for us deserve better. Should he alone be left exposed to fall in battle, we must bond together shield and helmet, mail, shirt, and sword. Then he waded the dangerous reek and went under arms to his lord, saying only, go on, dear Beowulf, do everything that you said you would when you were still young and vowed you would never let your name and fame be dimmed while you yet lived. Your deeds are famous, so stay resolute, my lord. Defend your life now. With the whole of your strength, I shall stand beside you. After these words, a wildness rose in the dragon again, and it drove to attack, heaving up fire, hunting for enemies the humans it loathed. Flames lapped the shield, charring it to the boss, and the body armor of the young warrior was useless to him. But Wiglaf did well under the wide rim Beowulf shared with him once his own had shattered in sparks and ashes. Inspired again by the thought of glory, the war king threw his whole strength behind a sword stroke and connected with a skull, and Nigling snapped Beowulf's ancient iron gray sword, let him down in the fight. It was never his fortune to be helped in combat by the cutting edge of weapons made of iron. When he wielded a sword, no matter how blooded and hard-edged the blade, his hand was too strong. The stroke he dealt, I have heard, would ruin it. He could reap no advantage. Then the bane of that people, the fire-breathing dragon, was mad to attack for a third time. When a chance came, he caught the hero in a rush of flame and clamped sharp fangs into his neck. Beowulf's body ran wet with his lifeblood. It came welling out. Next thing, they say, the noble son of Wiostan saw the king in danger at his side and displayed his inborn bravery and strength. He left the head alone, but his fighting hand was burned when he came to his kinman's aid. He lunged at the enemies lower so that his decorated sword sank into its belly and the flame grew weaker. Once again, the king gathered his strength and drew a stabbing knife he carried on his belt, sharpened for battle. He struck it deep into the dragon's flank. Beowulf dealt it a deadly wound. They had killed the enemy. Courage quelled his life. That pair of kinsmen, partners in nobility, had destroyed the foe. So every man should act, be at hand when needed. But now, for the king, this would be the last of his many labors and triumphs in the world. Then the wound dealt by the ground burner earlier began to scald and swell. Beowulf discovered deadly poison separating inside him, surges of nausea, and so, in his wisdom, the prince realized his state and struggled toward a seat on the rampart. He steadied his gaze on those gigantic stones, saw how the earthwork was braced with arches built over columns, and now that Thane, unequaled for goodness, with his own hands washed his lord's wounds, swabbed the weary prince with water, bathed him clean, and buckled his helmet. Beowulf spoke in spite of his wounds, mortal wounds, he still spoke, for he well knew his days in the world had been lived out to the end. His allotted time was drawing to a close. Death was very near. Now is the time when I would have wanted to bestow this armor on my own son. Had it been my fortune to have fathered an heir and lived on in his flesh, for 50 years I ruled this nation. No king or any of any neighboring clan would dare face me with troops. None had the power to intimidate me. I took what came, cared for, and stood by things in my keeping. Never fomented quarrels, never swore to a lie. All this consoles me, doomed as I am and sickening for death. Because of my right ways, the ruler of mankind need never blame me when the breath leaves my body for murder of kinsmen. Go now quickly, dearest Wiglaf. Under the gray stone where the dragon is laid out, lost to his treasure, hurry to feast your eyes on the hoard. Away you go, I want to examine that ancient gold, gaze my fill on those garnered jewels. My going will be easier for having seen the treasure, a less troubled letting go of the life and lordship I have long maintained. The story continues to go on, and we actually see that Wiglaf finds the treasure and is able to bring it to Beowulf before he passes, and he sees it and he dies, and he says, like, basically, burn my body here, as the dragon attempted to, and essentially establish like a cairn or whatever, so that people will know from, you know, now until forever that Beowulf died here and that, like, he died protecting his people. I think one of the things that's so powerful about this story partly is we don't know who the author is. So it's like, mm-hmm. this like cool, incredibly like just epic poem. And it could have been written by just some dude. We have no idea. It was an oral story for a long time before it was ever written down. Probably was never written down until well after the guy who actually created it was dead. And I think the thing that so impressed me, especially as, I mean, I was a middle school kid reading this story, is that, like, man, this is like something that they've made us read that is just like cool dudes doing cool stuff. Like, they're like, this guy is fighting a dragon, and like, he's got like turbo honor, and like, everybody that's around him like cares a whole lot about like being noble and, you know, honorable in battle, and
yeah.
standing beside their friends when, you know, even in the midst of like everybody else is fleeing because they want to protect their own life. And he's like, why would I ever, you know, protect my own life? What would my life be worth if I protected it rather than give it for my king?
Yeah.
And I thought that was incredibly cool. And it was one of those things where it was like the history of the story, considering that it was at the time, I don't know if it's still considered this, but it was the first story that we had, and it was Old English at the time, but like the progenitor of the English language, it was the oldest tale that we had written down. So the history of that was really cool. And I was like, man, we can reach back all the way to like the beginning of our language and see this start. It developed in me a love for history and interest in history that I think was, you know, even though this story is fantastical, it has still been a part of my life up to this day. And then it also, you know, created this huge desire for even more like fantastical elements and fantasy stories,
yeah.
which I think is that they tell something that's true. Mm-hmm. Ultimately it's myth, but it's myth with a seed of truth inside of it, where it's yeah. this idea that we hope, or we want to have this nobility inside of us that we're willing to face any difficulty, to stand beside those that are, you know, our friends and kin, and, you know, meet the challenge and do well in the face of that trial. That was super neat yeah. then. And I think it's super neat now. It was cool having come to this today and thinking, like, what is going to be the first entry into the anthology that I come up with? And Joey and Sam had actually just gotten me a book for Christmas called A Hobbit, A Wardrobe, and A Great War by Joseph LeConte. Mm-hmm. And it was about Tolkien and C.S. Lewis writing immediately after World War I, although some of the works didn't get published until considerably later. But how do they deal with like this difficulty of conflict? And
yeah, because they both fought in World War
I. Yes, they were both actually active combatants. There and saw the horrors and everything that were committed there. And still, I mean, presumably, who knows what happened back in 1000 AD. There was probably nothing good. that's all we can assume, that there was probably a lot going on that wasn't great. You know, this idea that there's like honor and nobility. And I think that was something that they were even trying to keep available, you know, after this huge atrocity of World War I and the loss of life and the death mm-hmm. and everything that came about there, that there is some honor and conflict, where we can see the nobility of the individual person who's fighting in the midst of it. And then we, out of that, we got Lord of the Rings and everything else. So
yeah,
some really incredible stuff in Beowulf. I know it's considered super dry. I know Michael Crichton was actually challenged to make Beowulf not dry by making 13th Warrior, which is its own interesting thing. The film with Antonio Banderas is of dubious quality.
I did not know that. That's weird.
And but that was the challenge that was presented to Michael Crichton, was like, take Beowulf and make it good, and or interesting at least to modern audiences. And he came up with the film was called 13th Warrior. The original book was called Eaters of the Dead, which is pretty rough.
It's way cooler.
Yeah, it was super cool. It was metal. That's the whole reason I bought it. I was like, man, I'm gonna buy this book because it's called Eaters of the Dead. By the guy who wrote about Jurassic Park and dinosaurs eating people. So this guy likes eating folks, apparently.
To your point about the themes, like having truth in them, in the myth, I think a lot of our modern mythology is superhero stuff.
Right.
Batman and Superman. And it seems what resonates the most with people right now is Captain America.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of he always tries to do the right thing, and he's not a puppet.
Right.
In a lot of the movies, he inspires other people to do the right thing, like in Winter Soldier, where they have orders to fire on people who haven't done anything, I think.
Right, yeah.
And the guy's like, can't do it, Cap's orders, and he's got a gun to his head, and he's just like a computer nerd, not a soldier, but he's inspired by the captain's example to like stand up and stand shoulder to shoulder with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Figuratively, but also like at real peril to himself.
Right.
And also, I think one of the biggest heroic guys in all those movies is in The Avenger when Loki's like, bow to me, and there's like one old guy who's like, nope.
Yeah,
there's, like, always, gonna, there's always a guy like you.
And yeah, he's like, I'm going to stand up anyway. Yeah.
So, I think the themes, even though the language is more or less a different language, the themes still resonate.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I mean, you're literally seeing something, like I said, it's more than 1,000 years past for sure. Mm-hmm. At its latest writing, it's well over 1,000 years old. And there's stuff that's in there that's still just as poignant and resonant today as there is then. And I said, it being one of the first things that I remember reading and really taking like academic learning and realizing it could be fun, wanting to engage with and like it pushing me towards history and everything else. It was like, okay, well, this is something that could be, you know, fun. I like how yours is something that's like, it takes something so ridiculous as just looking through the mail and mm-hmm. makes it into something, you know, it elevates it. It takes it beyond that. This takes something that we're all super familiar with in some ways with the Smith story, like the, mm-hmm. the superheroes and stuff like that. And it's like, it kind of gives us some of its origin, at least in our language. Because we obviously have stuff that goes even farther back than that, the mythology of ancient Greece and things of that, that are fantastic as well. And I'm super fascinated by those just as much as this, but I remember this being the first introduction I personally had to a mythological tale that existed in history. And it being a poem. So I was kind of excited, even though we're not all poetry, as Joey said, with the anthology, I was like, man, I wanted in my heart to have a poem for the first one, because Joey was coming in with a poem and I'm like, I don't really read a whole lot of poetry.
Yeah.
So where do I find it? And I was like, oh man, epic poems are a thing that exists. And in fact, Beowulf is like one of my favorite epic poems. So let me just bust that out and see what we've got. So hope you enjoyed getting to hear both of that. I definitely enjoyed getting to hear Joey do his. So.
Likewise.
Got me all pumped up.
I'm curious too to if y'all want to write in on Facebook or Twitter and let us know what your anthologies would include.
Yeah.
In the Robert Pinsky book, Singing School, he encourages you to actually sit down at a computer or handwriter or whatever, actually write down the poems or whatever it is that you like. And he says, because when you do that and when you say them out loud, they hit you in a different way. And that's why the book is called Singing School, because... Well, it's actually from a Yeats poem, that line. But the idea is the way that you learn is by saying it and involving yourself in it. It's not something you passively observe.
No, yeah. I think that that's
so I'm curious super what, cool. what y'all have in your anthologies. So let us know and maybe we'll talk about it.
Yeah. As a huge fan, as a huge fan of like the actual act of handwriting as well, mm-hmm. I'm going to recommend if you can write it down with your physical hand. I know that typing things is like, that's all the rage these days. We got keyboards, we got little virtual keyboards on mm-hmm. your phone, but sit down and even if your handwriting is bad, if you can read it, that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Sit down with a piece of paper and write it down there and then let us know via your keyboard. But I think there's a benefit to being able to write it down with your hand. I think.
Definitely.
So, taking the time.
So those are our first two entries. Now we want to talk about other stuff that we're currently into.
Yeah. Let's jump into that. Joey, what are you into right now?
One thing I like a lot that we talk about all the time is space.
Yep.
There is a TV show on Sci-Fi called The Expanse.
Expanse.
And it's based on like a 5-book series. The Sci-Fi show is good. It's not as deep, I would say, as Battlestar Galactica, but it's more serious. So it's sci-fi, but that's just kind of the backdrop, and it's really a drama. It's on Sci-Fi. If you have Amazon Prime, then you can watch the first season for free, or you can get this first season on Blu-ray. And it's about 200 years in the future. Mars is settled. Earth is settled. And then there are people kind of that don't belong to either. They're called belters. So they live in an asteroid belt. They mine the belt for water and minerals, and then those minerals and water go to the planets.
Okay.
The belters are kind of third-class citizens. Mars and Earth don't quite get along. Mars looks down on Earth because they see them as basically ruining their own planet, and they don't appreciate what it's actually like to have real sky and real water to be able to live, because Mars is still, I think, in the process of terraforming.
Or whatever, yeah.
And the belters can't even necessarily go to those planets because... they've grown up in space, so their bones can't handle it, and they've already started evolving a little bit. so that they do better in space long term, but they can't necessarily handle the gravity.
Huh.
And so there's a lot of kind of like class stuff going on between them and like espionage and intrigue.
Okay.
The season one plot just kind of revolves around some space truckers that get stuck in the middle of international intrigue. Kind of like... Interstellar.
There we go.
Space.
By the way, jumping in real quick, James S.A. Corey is the writer of the series.
So season two of that show just started, and Sam calls it Space Show. And one of us, if we're going to decide we're going to watch Space Show, one of us will text the other one early in the day and just say Space Show. And then we know we're in for The Expanse that night.
That sounds good. I haven't actually gotten to jump in on it myself yet, but it is something that I'm interested in. It was something that got talked about at the bachelor party, so it's something that...
That's why I got into it. I think Josh was talking about
it. Josh and Jeremy were both talking about it. And Jeremy, I think, had actually watched it. I don't remember if Josh had actually watched any yet at all. But it's something I want to get into as well. Now that you've told me that it's on Amazon Prime, something that we've often been fans of on this show.
Thanks for nothing, Amazon Prime, by the way.
Yeah.
No sponsorships.
No, nothing. They've thrown nothing back at us, except for quality content at a reasonable price.
There is that.
So just renewed mine, actually, today.
Nice.
Today is when my Prime membership renewed. But yeah, I'll hop on there and I'll look at that myself. I'm trying to think of stuff that I've been into here lately. I mean, Joey always puts on the notes Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. I'm pretty sure is what he always throws on there. And then some other joke comment that's ridiculous.
That is, I can verify that that is exactly what I did this week in the show outline. Yeah, it says Star Wars, Disney, and then something else.
So Disney is something that I'm super excited about. We're going to Disney for the honeymoon. I'm looking forward to that, but I don't know that I'm really into it as much as I will be literally next week when I'm in Disney World.
Nice.
Rogue One, I know, comes out on Blu-ray and DVD disc. Here either this week or next.
Oh.
It's real soon, so I know you were a big fan of Rogue One as well.
I did really like Rogue One.
I'm looking forward to picking that up and like having some of the special features and whatnot as well. I'm trying to think of other stuff that I've watched here lately. I've seen so many weird things that were like older deals. We've been watching This Is Us, which I know is kind of just like the classic, you know, couples like to watch this sitcom. It's not really a com. I don't know what it would be. It's like a family drama, a drama, I guess. Yeah.
Drama.
But it's got Milo Ventimiglia, and I always enjoy him. He's got, he's got like that weird, like kind of his
side
lip.
Talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
He played the son of Rocky. So
yeah,
it
it's incredible. Yeah. So it works.
He's
out
in
real
Gilmore
well.
Girls.
Yeah. Him and Randall are my two favorite characters, I think, on that show. Randall is, it's their son that's adopted. That was the little black child that was left at the fire station or whatever that they end up taking home. Yeah, he's a really good, he's an incredible, like, his character is really selfless and, like, almost to the, well, literally to the point of harming himself, because he cares about himself so little and cares about others so much. And so it's just kind of a cool character. The only other thing that I can think of is I play a lot of Elder Scrolls Online lately.
Nice.
It's available on PS4, Xbox 3, or no, not Xbox 360, Xbox One and PC. And it was, it came out, I guess, a couple of years ago. Went through a radical change here in the last probably 6 months to a year, where they went to a free-to-play system and opened up all of the content to where anybody could play anything, no matter what faction or whatever you picked. It's a really fun game. If you enjoyed Skyrim or just open world type games like that, where it's an RPG and you're running around and you could just always find new stuff to see and explore and really well-built environments where like you can tell that the people who were working on level design actually cared about what they were doing. So it's like you'll run across stuff and like find a little book or whatever, and you'll, if you actually take the time to read it, it's like, oh man, this is actually like a cool bit of, you know, lore, extra information about the area that I'm in or like the quest that
I'm
on.
I love the world building stuff.
Yeah, they're super huge into it. And so the people who design it and build it, I know that there's a lot of stuff online where people get frustrated with some of the mechanics of it from time to time, especially when you get into the PvP where you've got players fighting against players in the multiplayer
content. And that's a kind of plumbing pipe.
Yeah, PvP is plumbing pipe. But when you actually get into like the lore of the world and whatnot, you can tell that the people that are building the game really care about it and really enjoy putting in surprises for people who are willing to go the extra mile and like look for stuff that maybe other people wouldn't have found. And so it's always fun when you end up in like a little peninsula of an area that there's no reason you should go there. There's no quest marker. There's no anything else. And like, but there'll be something there that they were just hoping that, you know, some random person would stumble across and find. And that's the kind of attention to detail, I think, that makes a game way more interesting than just, oh, here's some cool content that I can do that everybody else has also done. There's legitimate feeling of like exploration to it, which is really fun. So
speaking of exploration, I'm going to take us back into space.
Let's go back into space.
And speaking of world building, so my all-time favorite video game series is Mass Effect, which is set in space, and you play a character named Commander Shepard.
You do.
And you get Shepard. To design...
Shepard.
You get to design Shepard. Shepard. Shepard and what he looks like, or she.
Yeah, could be a female.
It can be either way, and they're...
Colloquially really known good. As FemShep.
Yeah, and who voices FemShep? She's like the best.
Gosh, no, I know who you're talking about. I'm going to look it up. Keep talking, yeah. I'm going to find it.
Basically, just like in The Expanse, Shepard is just kind of a military guy or girl. What is her name? Jen something?
It's Jennifer something.
Jennifer Hale?
Yeah, that's it.
The universe that's built in Mass Effect and the history and the conflicts, everything is all built out for like, I don't know, 8 or 9 different species of races. And something about it just really captured my imagination. So I feel about that the way other people feel about Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or just other Twilight, other IP that people really attach onto. I knew that Dark Horse, a comics publisher, had made some Mass Effect comics, but I got my hands on this library edition of all of the Mass Effect comics. It's 400 plus pages.
Oh, wow.
Oversized, hardcover, like really pretty.
Yeah.
It tells probably 5 or 6 different stories about secondary or even tertiary characters in the Mass Effect video games. It also has this cool like pop-up video style, like little marginalia of notes from the writer, because the dude who wrote the stories also wrote a lot of Mass Effect 1 and 2.
Okay.
And so he's writing like, when I was coming up with this character, this was important to me, or the artist will say, one of my favorite things on this layout of this page was to make sure that you saw the expression or something. So you get a lot of background, double nerd satisfaction for me, because I get to live in that Mass Effect universe and experience the world building like you were talking about. But also, on top of that, you get to hear directly from the creators about what they were thinking about those characters and things like that. I just finished. It took me weeks, but I read all 400-something pages.
Is it Dark Horse? Did you say who?
Yeah, it's Dark Horse.
Yeah, I was going to say Dark Horse seemed like the people who usually picked up that kind of stuff. Yeah, and they did a good job with Star Wars for a long time.
I'd been wanting to buy it forever, but it's like $60-something.
Right.
But I found a good, like, new copy on the internet for like $30. Nice. So I finally got it. Now I'm going to get volume 2 probably next month.
Very, very cool. So I just read the book that I mentioned earlier in the podcast, River, mm-hmm. the Joseph LeConte is a Hobbit, a Wardrobe, and a Great War. Joey and Sam got me this, like I said, as a Christmas gift. An incredible book that looks at the lives of J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis and kind of the history. So it's more than just their life. It goes into like the history and the reasoning and sort of the, you know, the worldview at the time right before World War I, during World War I, and right after World War I, and like how their experience throughout that was actually kind of surprising, considering how many of the writers that came afterward were significantly different in their outlook on life than they were. Got me really excited about a bunch of other things in history that I've, you know, since Googled and Wikipedia'd and whatnot as well. So I highly recommend this book. I'm assuming that you can find it on Amazon and things like that. It was a New York Times bestseller at one point, according to the cover, which I guess they could have just affixed the sticker to it, you know, and who knows. But I could imagine why it would be a New York Times bestseller, because it was so good. So if you get a chance, I'll make sure Joey puts a link to it somehow or another in the show notes, because I think this book is incredible. And if you're interested in either of these two writers or personalities, having some of that would be fantastic to read. It was one of those books that I couldn't put down. So I highly recommend that. And because of that, I've actually jumped back into The Silmarillion, which I've been reading for the past week or so, diving deep into some of the stories that Tolkien originally wrote while he was actually under fire in World War I. A lot of the stories there were actually written in the trenches, you know, in
that's crazy.
France,
I didn't know
and
that.
Stuff like that. Yeah, that's so I found some of that out from this, and then I knew some of that at the time as well. Like, he came up with some of the earliest stories that ended up becoming Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and The Silmarillion while he was, you know, getting shelled all over the place by, you know, Germans or whoever was fighting him at the time. So it was incredible, like some of his views of depravity of war and like the difficulties of war and the cost that it had on people.
Yeah.
Because the characters in his, you know, stories are elves and dwarves and humans and, you know, kind of these archangel-y type weird things all over the place. But their responses to it make a lot of sense when you know that he was writing it in the midst of, you know, actual horrific conflict. So I recommend both A Hobbit Wardrobe and A Great War and The Silmarillion. So
nice.
It's an interesting story, although it's weird. So go into Silmarillion knowing that it's kind of disjointed and strange because it was stuff that was never finished in Tolkien's lifetime that his son kind of compiled after the fact. So,
oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah. It can be difficult to read because of that, but I think it's well worth the time to go through it because it's pretty cool to see how he envisioned the beginning of the world that ultimately ended up becoming Lord of the Rings. Because it takes it literally from void to creation. He was a super devout Catholic, and although he didn't create a overtly religious story like Lewis did ultimately with Narnia, where Aslan was Jesus, like literally, he definitely had a worldview and a build up in the story where you can see how there's like a benevolent God who basically creates the earth and humanity. And then there's some interesting other like Norse and, you know, Grecian myth influence on how it comes to pass.
Nice.
I think that's it for me right now. You?
I've been playing a little smartphone game called DC Legends. And it's just like a little RPG where you press a button with a hero and then you hit another button and fight other people.
I can get on board with that.
It's just real chill. Yeah. I do it to zone out.
Sounds good.
But it has good guys and bad guys, and there's like 90 characters you can play. So,
is there any cost to it?
If you want there to be cost, there is.
But if,
you don't have to pay for it.
That's always the best kind of... Yeah, that's the best kind of game. Well, that's fun. So yeah, hop on DC Legends if you get a chance to...
And I'll put all this on our Facebook page, I guess.
Yeah.
So look at our Facebook page,
Facebook page,
which is Globe and Crown TX.
Probably. You've seen it.
Yeah, y'all have seen it. You know what it is.
If you're listening, you've seen it somehow.
Send us an email or Facebook message or tweet or...
multiple tweets if you have more than 140 characters.
Secret handshakes.
Yeah. Or to the... What was the P.O. Box again? If you want to send us an actual letter.
P.O. Box 12132, Austin, Texas, 78711.
Okay. Well, yeah, sounds good. Send us something. We'll be glad to answer questions or just talk about topics you guys want to talk about.
Yeah,
but we're also going to keep bringing you some of this anthology stuff. I'm really digging it. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward about continuing the situation. And I'll probably be bringing you the next podcast as a married man. So I'm excited about that as well.
You might be married by the time we put this up.
I could very well be married by the time this podcast is up.
But you will be married recording it the next time.
That's correct. I'll be wearing a ring, not a ring of power, although it is kind of powerful, but not in the same sense that Bilbo's was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to hanging out and getting to talk to you guys, even Yoda always get to talk back to us. But we want you to talk back to us. Send us that stuff.
But when he says talk back, he doesn't mean get sassy.
Don't get sassy.
Because this is a free show, so...
Yeah, yeah. We're not in here for sass.
That's right. Except for our own mutual sass.
Yeah, we've got a lot of sass for each other.
Maybe that's what this episode should be called. Our own mutual sass.
I like it. But from us here at Global Crown, I'm Nathan.
I'm Joey.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Art is love, people. Art is love. Welcome, friend. How's it going? It's a hacky sack. Bounce. Gotta keep bouncing.
can't let it drop. Never let it drop. Come on, Jack. Everyone's watching. Expecting. Never let it drop. Everyone's counting on you, Zach. Don't let it drop. Don't ever let it drop. Sooner or later, it has to drop.